I'd like to call the meeting to order with the flag salute. Please follow me. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Mr. Seitz, can we have the report out of closed session?
Yes, President Baltimore, members of the board, staff, and audience, the board did go into closed session at approximately 6:10 tonight regarding three subject matters. First, existing litigation. They heard a report from legal counsel in regards to the ISJ or the LOCSD versus Golden State, and they also heard a report regarding the bankruptcy. In each of those matters, they did not take any reportable action. The second item under personnel matters, none of those items were considered due to time constraints. In regards to C, real property matters under Government Code Section 54956.8, they did hear a report from the district general manager and legal counsel, but took no reportable action. And that concludes my report.
Thank you. At this time, I'd like to introduce our newest member of the board, Mr. John Eric Storm, Director Storm.
Thank you.
I like that. Short and sweet. Want to try it? Thank you again.
It's an honor and a privilege to be here. Thank you.
I'd also like to, at this time, entertain a motion. Any comments, discussion?
No.
Seeing none? We have a vote.
Vice President Wright?
Yes.
Director Muthart?
Yes.
Director Ohilski?
Yes.
Director Storm?
Yes.
President Baltimore?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. With that, excuse me, I'm going to die without water. Can we have the reading of the agenda item?
President, members of the board, it is my pleasure this evening to present to you your audit for your financial statements ending June 30th, 2013. Here this evening to answer questions and to give additional information is Adam Guise. He's CPA and audit manager for Moss, Levy & Hartzman, LLP, and he is out of Santa Maria. And with that, Mr. Guise, if you'd like to present the audit to the board, I'd appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Hi. As she said, I'm Adam Guise from Moss, Levy & Hartzheim. Do you guys have the audits in front of you? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go through a couple of the highlights. So I wanted to just start off. We came out here in early June and then again in towards the end of September to do our field work. But then some of the process was delayed due to employee turnover, and so now we're getting to the final presentation of the audit now. So the first couple sections, the letter of transmittal and the management discussion analysis, I just want to point out that that's a section that's written by management of the district, and it's really good information just kind of summarize what happened this year. With some more explanations and everything thrown in, so it's not just pure numbers that you're looking at. And I also wanted to point out that on Roman numeral page 7 through page 9, there's three pages in here that are kind of going over the status of the bankruptcy filing as it affects the financials of the district. On page 1 of the audit report is the independent auditor's report letter, and I just wanted to point out that it's a clean opinion, which is the best kind of opinion. It's unqualified. There's no nothing that we found that was an error in the financial statements. Then on page 10 is the overall statement of net position of the district. And I wanted to point out that the restricted net position, there's several items listed coming from restricted funds. And that, if you look compared to last year's audit report, you'll notice that there's a large increase in the restricted balances, and that was just due to change in reporting of some of the other restricted funds. And on page 13 of the statement of activities, I just want to point out that the change in net position for both the governmental activities and for the business type activities, the business type being your mostly your water fund, was a positive number this year. So that means that you're moving in the right direction. Then on page, skipping ahead, on page 30, going ahead to the cash note, I did want to point out that all of your money is in relatively safe investments with LAIF and money market, which means that it's available to use on short notice, and they're safe investments that are backed, so you're not in risk of losing a large value there. But one thing to point out as well is that cash is on the low side compared to the assets and liabilities of the district. So one thing to keep in mind going forward is to try and increase the cash that you have. On page 33 is the capital asset notes. And here the major change this year, as you can see in the governmental activities, in construction in progress, because it wasn't finalized until the end of the after the end of the year, was mostly the purchase of a fire engine for the fire department. And then the construction in progress in the business type activities down in the second schedule, almost all of that value is and at that time they created a known liability that the district needs to pay back over time in your PERS retirement contributions. And this is actually part of the percentage of your retirement contributions. Prior to this year, it hadn't been shown on the district, but when we were looking back at it, because of the fact that it's a known liability of the district, it's not going to change, we decided that it was best to show this balance. And then the other item that I wanted to point out was the government auditing standards letter that was accompanying the audit report. Mm-hmm. And this was detailing the internal control findings that we had of the district when we came out for audit report. There were three findings here. One was dealing with the employee debit cards and needing approval from employee supervisor. There was one item that was tested that didn't have an approval signature on it. But I do want to point out on further review that this item, it had originally been approved. A check had been issued. They discovered that the check wasn't in the right amount. So the check was voided, and then when it was reprocessed, it was missing a recheck at that time. So that's something just to pay attention to when those situations occur. The second finding was in compensated absences, and with the way that the accounting system was used in the past, there was no formal system that was tracking in real time the compensated absences owed to employees of the district. There was another way that it was being computed, so we are comfortable with the year-end balances that are in the report, but we recommended that there would be a better system of tracking the compensated absences on a payroll-to-payroll or month-to-month basis. And that way the district has a better understanding of, you know, what's going on in that account and what the actual balance is at any time. And then the final item in the findings was really a carry-forward from a finding from the prior auditors in 2012. And that was just pointing out that the construction in progress of $22 million that I'd already mentioned was not likely to be a real asset going forward when the bankruptcy case was finalized. And for each of these findings, there is a district management action plan to discuss what management's direction is in terms to make sure that those items are corrected going forward. Overall, it was a nice audit to come out here. District staff, while the office staff was small at the time, was very helpful in getting us everything that we needed. And is there any questions that you guys have?
Thank you very much. Any questions from the board? No? See no questions? Then Mr. Guise, please be seated, and then we'll have public comment. And they may ask you questions, but I know, but don't answer, okay? At the end, we'll direction from the board. All right. So with that, I'd like to open up for public comment. Questions on the audit or comments on the audit? Oh, as come forward. Just clarification on your time is that you're going to see a countdown, and then when the 3 minutes comes up, it's going to beep, and it'll continually beep until basically I say thank you and you step away. So if you plan on running over, you're going to be running, talking to a beep. So just to let you know. All right. Thank you. With that.
Excuse me, yes. President Baltimore, do we want to try to get people to line up so we can move through people?
That is our policy. And so it would be helpful just because we have lots of agenda items, and for me, after each speaker go, who's next? So, let's follow that rule and see how it goes. So with that, if the next at least two speakers can stand up sort of towards the back of the podium, back where the equipment is, so at least I have an idea that there are more people willing to or ready to speak. And then the audience, as you see one go down, another one can go up there, so we don't have to have a line of 30 or 40 people. But that would be good.
30 or 40 so. People. I'm glad you're not doing the audit. For you, because I don't have it before me. That's certainly not his fault. That is public record and should be included in the packet as always. A question for you. In the past, we have been accustomed to seeing the draft audit at the Finance Committee. This shouldn't be a surprise. We've always been able to look at it earlier. So I guess I'm just expressing my frustration in that you're going to adopt this, you're going to accept it, and we really haven't had a thorough conversation about it. And I didn't hear anything from your general manager to say that, you know, she's supportive of any of what was done here. All the information came to the auditor late, and I'm not comfortable with you adopting it tonight. It hasn't had a thorough vetting at the committee level and before now.
Thank you. Next speaker. All right.
Richard Martinson. I also believe this should have been before finance, but it's basically a clean audit. You got here to this point because of the previous finance committees for the last 10 years, who put the time in, did the review, came up with the comments, pushed the adjusting entries that happened a year ago to square all the accounts. That all came from the Finance Committee and the public. So you're here because of them. So you know, because it didn't go before them this time, you know, not big a thing. But they're the ones that got you here.
Thank you. Any other speakers? Seeing none, I'll close public comment. Bring it back to the board. Any discussion?
I just wanted to clarify something. We're just receiving and filing this. This is a third-party audit. So, I mean, we don't have a say in what happens. I mean, we're just receiving and filing. So, it's an independent audit.
That's gotcha. Dr. Muhar?
I was just going to say that. However we've done it in the past in terms of getting pre-audits or whatever, if we get a chance, you know, this is not setting precedents. If we have a chance to have this in front of committees on our future audits, I'd say we should do that. I'm not suggesting that, you know, I think this is kind of a unique situation this year, with all of the circumstances going on at the district. That's all.
Yeah, if I could just speak to that. I mean, what we've done in the past is it's gone to the financial advisory before it came to us. I mean, it wasn't like, it was just for informational purposes. It wasn't like the FAC was giving input on the audit. Again, it's an independent audit.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that. I get not being on the FAC before, so...
Director Storm?
It's a pleasant surprise for me to start my short term with a clean audit.
Thank you. Director Wright? Yeah. Yeah, I would just like to say that kind of echo what Director Muthart said, is that coming out of bankruptcy, we could not address... How can I say this? Now that we're coming out of bankruptcy, we can say that the bankruptcy is for all practical purposes, finished in Los Osos. To say that Los Osos in bankruptcy would be very technically correct, because we have to keep the bankruptcy out there just for a period of time. Judgment has been rendered, creditors have been paid, and we're about to file the final decree. And so Los Osos is out of bankruptcy. With that, that allowed us to address a lot of our past or issues we couldn't address on our books. And that caused a lot of demand on staff and the general manager to bring everything up and basically create a clean slate. And so with that, it caused a sort of a stick in the gear type of thing of how we have been proceeding all along with the committees. What has happened in the short term, we do not plan to continue that. All right. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none.
Director Ohilski?
Yes.
Director Storm?
Yes.
Director Muthart?
Yes.
Vice President Wright?
Yes.
President Baltimore?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Guys. Okay. You're welcome to hang around. All right. No, not yet. Are there any items the board would like to pull from the consent? Is that public comment first?
On items not on the
agenda. Oh, not on the agenda. I'm sorry. Got ahead of myself. Sorry. All right. I'd like to take public comment for items not on the agenda. Jim Ford?
Yes.
Yeah. You went too fast.
Okay. Hi, I'm Catherine Winfrey with Morro Bay National Estuary Program. And I'm here to announce we have an event series coming up next month called State of the Bay. And it's our triennial event about the health of Morro Bay. But I just want to invite Los Osos CSD and the community of Los Osos to come to the event series and hear about those studies we've been doing, the work we've been doing for the past, 3 years. We've had State of the Bay in the past. This one is different in that we actually have a whole series of events for the whole month of April. And so we're opening it up to all ages. We have a pet-friendly event, a family event, and we also have a key presentation on April 5th at the Morro Bay Community Center. And that's where we'll present our State of the Bay report. So I would hope to see you there.
Okay.
The whole series is on our website, which is mbnep.org. And thanks.
Again, one more time, just could you give the website again?
A
little bit slower.
It's our acronym, so it's mbnep.org.
And the acronym stands for?
Morro Bay National Estuary Program.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
If it's possible, I'd like to go ahead and put a link on our website, too, since we are involved in the organization. And when you talked about health of Morro Bay, I want to make clear to everybody, we're talking about the bay, not the city of Morro Bay.
Right. It's the whole estuary. So we do a lot of work down here in South Bay, the bay, the estuary here. And we actually have some events here in Los Osos, too, to try and bring the whole community together because we all impact the health of Morro Bay. So we partnered with Sage to do a bay-friendly gardening presentation, which is really timely. We'll have to talk about water-wise gardening and bay-friendly gardening. So I hope that's... I think the only event in Los Osos this time.
But excellent.
It'll be a great one.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, next speaker.
Keith Weimer, member of the Los Osos Sustainability Group. I handed out some information. It is the same information I've given to the parties in the ISJ basin planning process, but it's for people that might not have seen it. So. I'd like to know a few things about the basin plan and the process. What changes have been made, and will the public see a revised version before it is submitted to the court? And when will it be submitted to the court? I pointed out some serious problems, as you know, and made some recommendations. I'd like to know exactly what the parties have done to improve the plan. I'd like to know if the basin plan, for instance, now explains that Zone 3, over one-third of the basin, is too contaminated to use except for one well, and whether the parties plan to try to save it. I'd like to know if the basin plan acknowledges that Zone D most likely still has accelerating seawater intrusion. It supplies three-fourths of our water supply, and it probably has accelerating seawater intrusion due to the continuing drought. That could wipe out the basin in not too distant future. I'd like to know if the plan now states that seawater intrusion can and has permanently destroyed much of the basin, and if it explains why basin capacity is now estimated at 200,000 acre-feet when it was once estimated at 500,000 acre-feet. I believe this shows that over one-half of the basin has been lost to seawater intrusion. I'd like to know if the basin plan acknowledges that the CSD, county, and other purveyors have overdrafted the basin 30 to 50% for 35 years, a much higher percentage than the Paso Robles Basin has been overdrafted. I'd like to know if you expect homeowners to believe that 40% more water can be pumped from the basin by moving a few wells, and the basin will support full build-out based on the model that has served us so well in the past. That's a joke. I'd like to know if the parties have scaled back claims that the planned so-called state-of-the-art conservation program will produce 400 to 500% more seawater intrusion benefit than it actually will, and if you are ready to put in a truly state-of-the-art conservation program like the one the Sustainability Group recommends. Finally, I'd like to know if the county and CSD will put ordinances in place to show you are actually serious about saving the basin after 40 years of abuse and neglect.
Also this last year, the dewatering began. And I've been tracking the dewatering. You sent a letter. I was very pleased. You sent a letter to the regional board asking for them to step in and help us with influencing the county to put the water back in the ground as much as possible. And we were told that it was either infeasible and or it was ending soon. It's not over, gentlemen. The dewatering continues. The wasting of water continues. So far, over 150 million gallons of water has been pumped. 25 million gallons of it went to the creek, which went to the bay. 55 to 75 million gallons went directly to the bay. 50 million went to the Tri-W site, That did percolate. It spilled over onto the neighbor's property, but it did percolate, and we may get a chance to use that again in our aquifer someday. And $20 million of it went to dust control. But the dust control, these contractors admit that they are losing the water by using it for dust control on streets that don't have dust. It's evaporating on the warm asphalt on a sunny day. We will never get to use that water again. You have a hand in the basin management. Dewatering is basin management. You need to say something. You need to get angry. I'm angry. Tonight you're going to talk about the drought and the implications and the ordinance towards conservation emergency. We're wasting water every day through the dewatering process, and no one is talking about it.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Hello, my name is Daryl Rowe. I'm with the Los Osos Investment Group. I'd like to introduce myself if I could. We're involved with the property located on the corner of Pine and Los Osos. I'm not sure if, I think probably some of you know a little bit about our concept. It was actually in the February 13th Bay News. I'd like to just kind of address the board a little bit and kind of tell you a little bit what we're trying to do if you don't already know. We have that property. One of the things we're trying to do at this point is to move the water and wastewater that we have on that property off to some alternate location, some recipient properties, in a sense leaving that property available for a potential donation to the community for some kind of community project that you guys have probably talked about or may be talking about. The lots that we are looking at are in the prohibition zone. We currently have two will serve applications submitted to LOCSD, one on 10th Street and one on San Ysabela. And we intend to build low flow energy green homes on several lots that are located in the S&T Mutual and the Golden State Water Company service areas. One of the difficulties that we've run into is that there is a sewage assessment of $228,000 on the Pine property. We believe that the county and the project assessment engineer will be able to resolve that matter. I know we have a lot of work ahead of us, but right now everything is looking feasible. And one of the things that we are confident about is that the homes that we hope to build, are going to use significantly less water than currently used with the credits that are there. One basin, we will be pulling less water out of that if our concept is approved within the community. So,
all right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any other comment from...
Lindio and Los Osos, or hello. I wanted to first talk about Channel 20. There's some good programming that appears to be happening on it finally, and I'm glad to see the updates of the equipment have helped us access some of that. And I know that after multiple requests to Mr. Gibson, our supervisor, the town hall or the public forum sewer meeting from last week is now showing. I just want to encourage, again, going one more time back to the county and asking if we can have even the electronic sign at times. I know Jan did a good job keeping, you know, little tips running across it, but I haven't seen them lately. Just one little hint, Jim Morocco wrote a letter to the editor in the Tribune and said that he did an experiment. He shaved his head and managed to save 10 gallons of water per shower, not having hair. So, I mean, those are great little tips if anybody wants to go bald. I also want to talk about the Tri-W failure this last rain, and it again overpoured immensely, and it's the worst overflow I've seen. ran off the property and caused it made a huge erosion. Go look at it. There's now a river of sand, and it's now overpouring out of what was originally the collection basin there, going towards the mobile home park. So another 5 years with no action, it will be hitting the bay, and I think we'll be getting penalties. Anyway, I guess that's about it. I really want you to try to bump up conversations with the county so that we can actually be involved in what is being put in our community. There's numerous questions and problems about why they tear a street up. The street I live on, the Purple Pipe, I guess the county said not to worry about putting the braces on, and now they're back tearing up a beautiful street to put the braces on.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Good evening, board members. My name is Bill Moylan, and I wanted to emphasize that I'm in league with Julie Tacker's opinion about the wastewater or the waste of the water that they're doing with the dewatering. And I would like the board to approach the California Central Coast Water Board to ask them to have them stop wasting the good water. The water was tested to see if it was polluted. It was not polluted, and they were throwing good water into the bay. There's a thing that's called directional boring, and that can be done in wet soil. And that should be used where they can bore through the soil that they need to put their pipe in. They can pothole areas where they need to see where the pipe is going. And then they can pull the pipe, and it can be directional boring can be done with large diameter pipe. This approach should be taken rather than just have them dewater until they have soggy ground where they can lay their pipe. This is just ridiculous for them to keep throwing water away. We only have one limited source of water, and like Keith Weimer said, that is our basin, and when that goes, that's it. There is no state water that we can get. And I don't want us to be like ostriches that stick our head in the sand, which will be dry if they lose all that basin water, or if they dewater to the point where there is no water in the upper aquifer. So being members of the board of the local CSD, I request that you speak to the California Central Coast Water Board and ask them to have ARB or WAR stop dewatering to put their pipe in the ground when they can do directional boring. I worked for the gas company for a long time, and that's what we did. Thank you.
Thank you.
Richard Margetson. Wasn't going to talk about this, but it came up tonight. This Pine Street project. How do you transfer water credits when nobody's been living there for how many years now? I mean, are we going to go way back in the historical record and come up with an average like they did for McDonald's project that said they were using currently 23 units of water a month for landscaping at the bank? Figure out how many gallons that is a day, gentlemen. There's no way that amount of water could be placed on that. But here we go again. Nice little bait and switch with water credits, sewer credits, as the basin's going to hell. My other comment is, now that the bankruptcy's over, I think you guys have to have a study session yourselves on where we are with certain issues in Los Osos affecting this community, because at LOCAC last week, your CSD report was given by your president. And when asked by a member of LOCAC about the effects, if there was any possibility of funds being available from this drought relief pool that's been put together by Obama and the governor, Mr. Baltimore said he didn't know, he'd have to look into it. They're running over this community. 60 acre feet
of water going to dryland farmers. That's more than has been saved with the water conservation program to this point. That's what's happening to your basin, gentlemen.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Jerry Walsh, Los Osos. I am going to try and speak truth to power. I'm very disappointed in the way the direction this board is going. It's like you're circling the wagons. You haven't had financials since last when? October, November, available to the public? You aren't giving anything to finance committees, essentially disbanding the finance committee. What are you hiding? You had a golden opportunity to hire as manager one of the brightest minds in water in the county, Ron Munns. And instead, you hired a manager who has not gotten out financials, who is not giving this community any information. And above that, you are making mistakes in the water billing. You're overbilling a lot of people in the district and underbilling. Now, you may say that's a computer glitch, a computer problem. Well, I say garbage in, garbage out. What are you going to do to rectify that overbilling? I know you're saying you don't have time, or the manager doesn't have time to do this. The manager sits at the Board of Supervisors meetings, listening to the Board of Supervisors, when she should be in her own district taking care of the problems that are in the district. And why aren't you having finance committee meetings? It almost seems like there's a shell game going on with the money in the district. Thank you.
Thank you.
Lynette Tronotsky, Los Osos. And I think you on the board probably already know this, but perhaps the public does not, that according to who you ask, be it the water board or John Waddell, the person who's running our wastewater project, 1 million gallons to maybe 300,000 gallons of water is seeping into the bay all by itself every single day. So this hair on fire reaction of water going to the into the bay, it's happening anyway. So if they siphon some out of the trenches, which are in line with where the water is going anyway, it seems kind of silly to be so critical and so angry about something that's happening naturally anyway and has been for many years. Also, I would like to say that I am very pleased with how the general manager is running the office and how that's working. I completely disagree with a prior speaker, so I would just like to say that not everybody holds that opinion. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no more speakers, I'd like to close public comment. Board, any comments?
I do have one question on the, what is the timeline on the basin water? Okay, but I mean, there's, okay.
Mm-hmm. Any?
No, I'm not.
Yeah, it's just, I think I will move on to the next agenda item, which is see if there's any items now to pull from the consent agenda. No. Which way does it go?
In the past, we've considered the administrative and committee reports before we get to the consent agenda, and that's when you ask for items to be pulled.
Okay. I am going to ask staff to physically put that on
the agenda.
Agendas when we pull consent items. okay? Because I remember as vice president having some fun with this issue too. Okay, thank you. So we'll just go to administrative and committee reports. Fire department report. Chief Inaris.
Fire extinguishers also. But we have smoke detectors and carbon monoxide detectors, as well as batteries. We'd love to give you a hand. You can call the fire station at 528-1053 to schedule an appointment. All right. In January, Company 15 and Station 15 responded to a total of 104 calls. Five of those were simultaneous calls requiring advanced life support. 72 of them were medical aid calls, 42 requiring advanced life support from the paramedics. There were 5 traffic collisions and 6 fires, as well as a handful of other calls that they responded to. Company 15 came back a total of 9 times. You have in this package a trifold handout. Each one of you has it in front of you as well. There's a number of them at the back of the audience as well. Harmony Brown, my assistant, and I worked with CAL FIRE staff in San Luis, as well as some other folks around the state. As we've mentioned, the last couple of months, we've had an unusual amount of homeless encampment fires in the district as well as outside the district in San Luis County. And so Harmony worked with Chief McEwen, put this together. It's a pamphlet that's designed to work with the homeless population and those who help with the homeless population. It basically says, you know, gives ideas of how to have a safe fire. We know that fires are going to be out there. We know that they're going to have warming fires. It's just a fact of the economy. It's a fact of the population that chooses to live that way. So we're trying to work with them to come up with ways where they can exist as they do exist, live as they do live, and do it safely. So that handout is there. If there's any questions or if people would like to have me stop by, I'd love to meet with folks and walk them through this. Also in the month of January, we had a couple of resignations. Chris Rhodes, after about a year, or actually about 2 years, and Andrew Robles, after 6.5 years, resigned to move on to other things. As you know, we've been working with some firefighters and getting them online, and Patrick Leonard was able to complete all of his work and is actually working shifts now. Looking forward to that. Along the lines of hiring and resignations, we're down to just about 20 now. We started out with 28 probably 6-7 months ago. So we will be doing a focused recruitment and hiring in the coming months. So if folks are out there interested in becoming a firefighter, please stop by the station. We'd love to give you some instructions. We anticipate starting a new academy in the fall, and it takes about 4 months to get them on board for that academy. We did some training in the month of January. That's detailed in item 9. And item 10 continues to talk about the chipping project and the butterfly habitat group that's working out in Monarch Grove. That concludes my report. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them for you.
Any questions from the board?
I just had one question about the flyer. How are you getting this to people, the homeless?
So we printed those at Station 15 ourselves. But CAL FIRE, County FIRE, out of our San Luis office, printed 1,000 of them as well. Mm-hmm. So those have been distributed through all of the County FIRE and CAL FIRE stations in San Luis. And we've all been trying to get out and meet with the public, go to the homeless shelters, go to various groups, kitchens and such, distribute them there, leave them there, and if they'd like us to make presentations, we're trying to make presentations. This just came out just about 2 weeks ago, so we're still in the initial phases of that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Utilities department report.
Good evening, President Baltimore, Vice President Wright, Board. Welcome, Mr. Storm, staff, and public. I'm here to report on the operations of the Utilities Department for the month of January 2014. So the total production in January was 17.8 million gallons, and this represents an increase of approximately 16% when compared to last year. 57% of the service area was billed for 16 million gallons for the period December 18th through February 10th. and this generated $137,045 in revenue. So the consumption decreased by approximately 2%, but revenue increased by approximately 3% when compared to last year. Production and runtime hours are depicted in the tables on the bottom of your first page of the staff note, and also attached are the static well levels for each well site. Crews continued with the valve exercise program, and they've updated a few service lines and replaced some water meters, and they worked on a chlorine tank over at the 8th Street and reinstalled the cage up at the South Bay Upper Aquifer well. Crews performed maintenance on the 6th and El Moro drainage lines in January, and we received 0 inches of rain. So.
Hello. I'm Jen Harper, LOCAC District 2. February meeting, Tricia Knight from TEK Consulting made a presentation in regards to three potential sites for a new cell phone tower. She is seeking input from LOCAC and members of the public regarding which would be the most acceptable site. Verizon is considering using several smaller installations. LOCAC members and members of the public gave some site suggestions. Verizon will return when they have specific sites in mind to receive more input from LOCAC. A countywide proposal to make reasonable accommodation adjustments to residential housing for handicap access was discussed. The proposed changes related to a new provision for planning accepting changes by property owners to accommodate handicapped residents and tenants that otherwise would not completely comply with the code. LOCAC found the proposed language acceptable, if vague. There was some question of whether or not it is even necessary. There was a minor use permit to allow a vacation rental and the status of a house on Mitchell Drive. This item was pulled from the consent agenda because new information and neighbor comments were received after the project was reviewed in the Land Use Committee. There is conflicting information from the applicant and the neighbors that has to be resolved by the planner. Concerns include parking availability, increased traffic, and the suitability of the property for rental. There was a tie vote for a motion to support. The motion failed. There was no other offer of a motion. A letter is being sent to the planning department with our comments and our concerns. A special meeting will be scheduled later in March for further discussion on the McDonald permit in Los Osos. This is to include the new information that was presented at the Planning Commission presentation. That will be how it's coming back to LOCAC. There will be a Board of Supervisors decision in April because they're appealing to the Board of Supervisors. Our next meeting is the fourth Thursday of the month. That's March 27th at 7 p.m. at this location. Traffic and Circulation March meeting is next Tuesday, March 11th at 5:30 p.m. in the small conference room. The Land Use Committee meets on March 13th, next Thursday at 6:30 p.m. We have elections in May. Each of the districts, 1 through 4, and the district map is on our website, locac.info. Applications are available next week at Farmers Market, online, other locations, and any LOCAC council member. And LOCAC would like to welcome Director Storm and thank you.
One quick question. At least I have one question. So to confirm the community plan, surveys for the community plan, people of Los Osos can take a Survey Monkey on the county website?
I believe that's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, I believe they're working on the draft plan right now. I'm sure it'll come to LOCAC, but I think they're trying to gather more data. We did have meetings, two meetings a month, but I think they're trying to gather more data from people that weren't available or were able to make the meetings.
So that's slowplanning.org,
yes.
Survey Monkey. Any questions from the directors? about the community plan for Los Osos. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Bet.
You're excused.
The Emergency Services Advisory Committee report.
Yes, the Emergency Services Advisory Committee met on February 25th. We welcomed back our two reappointments, Vita Miller and Julie Tacker, as well as our new alternate committee member, Mr. David Harris. I then gave a presentation on the Brown Act for our Brown Act training. And Mr. Golden commented on his historic perspective on the Brown Act, since apparently he knew a lot about it when it was actually implemented. We also talked about the fire department update that the chief just gave, and we updated the committee on the information about the CERT trailer and that their recommendation was implemented by the board prior to acceptance of the CERT trailer. There was also a question and discussion about whether the AED has been installed at the South Bay Community Center. The chief said it would be
map reports, but the best thing that's going on is the guys are driving around and checking out the roads, and there's been some delays, but they are working around it.
Okay. Many. No? Very good. Thank you. Go to the next one. Next one is Utilities Advisory Committee.
Okay, Mr. President, the Utilities Advisory Committee did meet on February 12th, and we had one item on our general agenda, and that had to do with discussion regarding the water shortage. What do we call it? Well, the Water Shortage Subcommittee presented the ordinance,
yes.
their draft ordinance for the emergency water shortage regulations. Subcommittee member Rob Miller reviewed the summary of the triggers, and member Ron Munns reported on the mechanisms and stages. I won't go into detail because it's on our general agenda item 12B, and we'll be discussing that in more detail. There was some good public comment in there, some good questions about commercial, how this ordinance will affect them, and of course we how the financial impacts of this. So we'll be discussing that later. So our next meeting is scheduled for March 12th at 5:30 at the district office.
All right. The outdoor conservation program is currently with staff, correct?
Yes, and staff is scheduled to bring that back. I believe it's in March.
In March?
That will be on the March UAC agenda.
So we can task the UAC committee with,
yes,
working with staff and the general manager on that outdoor conservation plan.
That's correct.
Very good.
Okay. All right.
Thank you. All right, next committee report is the Financial Advisory Committee. And the Financial Advisory Committee has had, as I believe, we have three open seats and one alternate. That makes four seats available. Is that correct? And we've had four applicants. All right. So I'd like to put forward for the board those four applicants. I can put forward Deanna Richards as a voting member, Gene Hayer as a voting member, Wallace Raynor as a voting member, and Jeff Edwards as the alternate. And then that's just the slate that I just propose. This is for the board to discuss, and if you want to change it, so please discuss.
I just have a question. I mean, you know, I have a question.
Excuse me. Council, am I out of order?
That wasn't my question, but go ahead.
Hang on.
You're on the financial committee report. Generally, in terms of the appointment of committee members, it is something that is normally agended.
Normally. Am I out of order?
As long as there is a public comment in regards to the item, I think you can take the action if the board approves it.
Okay. Are we going to be quiet in the audience? No. Are we going to need the sheriffs here?
As I indicated earlier, the financial advisory minutes were to be considered tonight. This is not an agenda item. If there is an emergency that requires that the action be taken tonight, it can be placed on the agenda. But that takes a vote of the board to place it back on the agenda.
I would like the board to discuss that. Is this an emergency or not? Yes,
this is the chair. I mean, my comment would be, we do have two board members that are continuing on the financial advisory, and our bylaws do not require a majority for a quorum, so the committee could still meet, but it would only be two people.
Okay. Well, then I defer to the chair and the vice chair on the financial activities committee. Are we comfortable enough tasking them with assignments over the next month or so?
Well, that was the question I was going to raise before. Since we do have a new board member, when are you going to go ahead and, I mean, he needs to sit on a committee, I would assume, rather than him not being on a committee. But that was right. The question I was going to raise. But, I mean, my concern, and I don't know whether this is an emergency or not, but my concern is we need to do our Brown Act training for these people, you know, annually, so we have to have that meeting. And if we're going to go ahead and start the new budgetary process for the upcoming year, I would like to have that vetted by the committee and, you know, prior to it coming to us. So if we don't appoint them until the 3rd of April, then I don't get them actually meeting until the May meeting, so that gives us 1 month, one meeting to deal with the budget. That's my concern. Whether that constitutes an emergency or not, I'm just trying to state the factual consideration I have or concern I have.
Well, yeah, my comment, I'd rather see the committee constituted sooner than later. Is it being an emergency? That I don't have an answer for that.
I can just point out that on the approved calendar for the committee meetings, the next FAC committee meeting is scheduled for April 21st. I don't know whether that schedule still holds. If it is, then there is the April 3rd meeting.
The next FAC meeting that we were considering having was March 24th for our Brown Act training, so that they would be up and running in this month. So that was the... I mean, I don't know that it constitutes an emergency, and maybe a thought is that we could have the meeting with the two members and then have these other four people attend, but not as members, but as members of the public. Maybe that's a way to do it.
Would it be too much to have a special meeting concurrent with the next financial advisory committee meeting, where we meet first, appoint the members, and then hold the meeting? Since a lot of the people in this sitting around here will be there anyway, so for the next financial, because we, like you said, when we were trying to have it earlier, we have another meeting I forget what day. We didn't really throw out a date.
No, it was March 24th.
March 24th, okay.
But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, this is, I guess, a question for Michael again, and I don't want to really want to get way off task, but if we just have the meeting called with the two committee members we still have, these four people attend as a member of the public, and we're using this meeting to do the Brown Act, you know, the required Brown Act education, et cetera. Do they actually have to be members of the committee, or can they be members of the public sitting in on that? I'm not trying to cut, you know, I understand it's a difficult question, but I would like to get this committee, because one of the things that we're concerned about is we'd like to get this committee up and running and get it restarted and being involved. So,
right.
Marshall, I think it's okay for you to invite them and to do the Brown Act training and to provide them with whatever certification that you want to provide them. They'll be appointed perhaps at that meeting or at the April 3rd meeting, but in any case, the Brown Act training would have been completed.
All right, so if I hear this from the board, this is not an emergency, and so we will not appoint anybody to the committee as it is.
Tonight.
And we continue on.
We will have this meeting on the March 24th, which we'll invite. We'll have the two current members there, and we'll invite the four people who applied for these positions to be there, and that will be basically an orientation and a Brown Act training meeting.
You don't want to try to add a special meeting to that to appoint them?
Well, I'm going to be there anyways.
Yeah, that's, I mean, you two are going to be there. Staff will be there. It would just be a matter of at the Financial Advisory Committee? Oh, not a,
yeah,
not for that one.
So we can discuss that later to see.
But I think staff can go ahead and we'll call the meeting for the 24th with the two existing committee members, invite those other four members. We can do the Brown Act training, do the orientation, and then we can make the appointments at the April meeting. I don't really see a problem with doing that.
All right. That's how we'll proceed then.
It's going to work.
All right. So the Financial Activities Committee report, 0.00 small percent. So those are two things I'd like to see the committee do.
President Baltimore?
Yes.
Yes, President Baltimore, along with that same line, staff would request that you ask them to develop an investment policy.
And then committee to develop
an investment policy.
Okay.
We have one, but it needs to be updated. And additionally, we would like them to develop a reserve policy that then can be recommended to you as a board. The investment policy and the reserve policy, as well as the allocation plan under government accounting practices and principles, must be adopted on a yearly basis, along with the budget.
Very good. Is
scare away board members.
any other comments from the board on the report? No. None. Thank you. All right, so now we are at item 9G, Director's Announcements of District and Community Interests and Reports on Attendance at Public Meetings, Training Programs, Conferences, and Seminars.
You want to go first? I'm going to go, so you want to go first? I don't care.
Go ahead, and you can go first.
Okay. Just a couple things here for public interest. We did have our Special Districts Association annual meeting on February 21st. Our guest speaker this year was, well, actually, I had two of our board members here attended along with me, and our general manager attended. But we had Frank Meacham as our guest speaker this year. And he gave us some insights because he's been very involved in the Paso Groundwater Basin, and he's been spending a lot of time going up to Sacramento, being involved in water conferences, and he shared with us how he had gone to a meeting in the governor's office and some of the intricacies of what happened during that meeting. But I thought, I think the two things that I took away most from that, and the other two board members out there might be able to add on to this. But first of all, I mean, he was very, very clear, and, you know, and I like this political philosophy, I guess. You know, he said, don't tell me no, tell me how. And I thought that was really, really telling. So it was being problem-resolving oriented rather than being obstructionist. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really know that about Frank until I heard him say that, and I think all of us were impressed by that approach and his thought process. And the other one is he stressed the importance of long-term planning and hydrological planning. So instead of dealing with emergencies on an emergency basis, let's go ahead and take a long look at this so we can plan now for the contingencies in the future rather than being in a crisis mode. So those are the two things I took away from his talk that I found very, very informational that I thought was good for us. Second thing is I think I may have been the only person from the board, but the February 27th Prado Road Homeless fundraiser that was held at Embassy Suites, I represented the community or the board there, and I would really, it was a very, very good event. There was a lot of people there. And even though the homeless shelter will be located on Prado Road, most likely, it does have an impact on our community. And as the chief mentioned about the homeless encampments, et cetera, that are potential for causing wildfires. So I would encourage people in the future to go ahead and attend this Prado Road homeless fundraiser because I thought it was a very, very good event. So, and it benefits us all. So those are the two things that I did on behalf of the district in the last month.
Well, I was going to say, I was just going to concur with, it was refreshing to hear Frank Meacham talk. I think that I wish we had more Frank Meachams in a lot of levels. And I think it's, you know, indicative of the fact that he came from private industry before going into politics. And I think he brought a lot of skills with that, and it was very informative.
I agree. I was impressed as well, and with that. It was a good event. Marshley did a great job. You, as president of the association, got a lot of good speakers. It was good. They have a lot of good resources and people out there that are involved in governing communities and care immensely. So it's nice for you to bring them all together.
Okay. I appreciate that. And Jan already left, but one thing that came up that the LAFCO, David Church, brought up is the sphere of influence update for Los Osos is up this year. So I wanted to make sure LOCAC was aware of that.
Okay. Mr. President, I attended the RAC, or at least part of it, as much as I could. Margaret Faulkner was also RAC was somehow drought related in all the programs. So they're going to be looking for projects that have to do with some sort of drought relief or planning. There was, of course, they had the large conversation about the Paso groundwater basin. And there was a presentation by John Diodati regarding local and regional drought responses. I do have a copy of his presentation is available on the rack. I won't hand out any copies that Ann has not seen. but if anybody wants to come and see me. It is available at the RAC website as well. The Board of Supervisors, as was stated, will declare a local emergency at the March 11th meeting, with emphasis on six items, including legislation, funding, a task force, interagency coordination, emergency projects and programs, and water conservation. Again, the website is full of information. I have put in the back of the room the, what did I put back there? I know you gave me a copy back. This is a summary of the Water Resources Committee annual report. So if you're interested in what the RAC has been doing in the last year, everything here is summarized for all their activities. So go ahead and take a look at that. And that's all I have.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Can you let the public know what RAC stands for?
Water Resource Advisory Committee. And it is a committee that's put together of it's to advise the Board of Supervisors of water resource matters in the county.
You're not into
RAC?
No.
No. No. All right. Negative.
All right. Now I get to ask the board if there's any items on the consent agenda that they want to pull.
Mr. President, I'd like to register an abstention on item B.
Oh. Now,
what I would suggest is that you approve the rest of the consent calendar and take that item specially. And just have the vote of the people that were there on that item. So you'd pull item B,
but
you'd vote on item A, C, D, and E, then consider item B and only have those that were present vote.
I understand that. Is item B would then become an agenda item? I mean a general agenda item?
Okay. My understanding of the bylaws is that I can simply register an abstention without pulling it.
Right.
So I would inquire as to that point.
Well, I've not seen that procedure before. Generally, it's better just to pull it and not have a vote on that item. I'm not going to question your review of the of the bylaws because I, frankly, am not familiar with that. The general process that I am familiar with, to make it clear, is to have that item pulled, have the people who were present at that meeting vote on that item, and then consider the rest of the consent calendar as one.
I just think it's cleaner if it's pulled and just have the people who are at the meeting vote on it. It's just cleaner that way. So we'll pull item B from the consent, and then we'll have the directors at the meeting just vote on it. Just. So it goes last. All right. So, and with that, public comments for items on the administrative and committee reports and the consent agenda, which does not include item B.
Good evening again. I am Julie Tacker, and this is the administrative and committee reports. What's missing? An administrative report. And I remember that at your last meeting, you directed staff to begin providing those. So I don't know where it is. Additionally, we didn't get really a report on the billing snafu, and that also was directed by your board, and that creditors have already received checks, and they're being cashed. I just thought that was backwards, because how could you stop a check if it's already been cashed? And that's your job, is to look at that warrant register, and if you see something you have question about, you can stop the check from being processed, and that can't happen tonight if they've already been cashed. There are five or so warrants that were already sent. The Wilvert, the Musi, Merrill, McNeil, and Langfelt. Those are related, those are creditors from the bankruptcy. And as I recall, they're related to sewer assessments. These people are getting fractional refunds of their 2003 assessment. And I recall that the board denied those creditors. So I'd like a very clear explanation how did that get approved?
Thank you.
Good evening, Board. Bev DeWitt-Moylan, Los Osos. I'm just here to comment on the LOCAC report. I wanted to mention regarding the community survey that someone was at the meeting from the county who was involved with the survey, in charge of the survey, and she mentioned that there were no limits on how often a person could submit a survey, how many surveys could be submitted from a specific computer, which would make it seem as though someone with a vested interest in the outcome of that survey would want to submit as many as they possibly could and skew the outcome and have their preferences met. And I think that's a real flaw in this survey that needs to be addressed. The second thing is on the water severity. A question came up from one of the LOCAC members about he didn't know how severe the water severity problem is, and Mr. Gibson didn't know either, and he directed questions about water severity to the purveyors. And I would just like to say that Mr. Weimer, Keith Weimer, who spoke earlier, has made this his mission for the last several years, looking at our water, looking at our basin, and if anybody knows what's going on with our water, it's Keith. And I think you need to get his contact information, anybody who wants to know about water in the community, on this committee, on LOCAC, and contact Keith and get what's really going on, because he is the person who is probably the expert in this town on our water. Thank you.
Thank you.
Lindy Owen, I just had a couple of things. I, too, wondered where the administrative report was. That was helpful for us that are trying to follow what's going on, and we do have new management, so it would be nice if we could get those back into our monthly meetings. And I also have a question about replacing Ampi, our old bookkeeper. She's been gone since November, I believe, and I know we have a fill-in right now, but I'm just wondering how long will it be before we actually hire a regular full-time person, and what will that process be? And I would have to agree about the LOCAC's discussion. I wish Jan had put the survey info out again, too, because that is the problem, is people don't know that there is a survey available, and I think there's only 2.5 weeks left to meet it. So it's a really important one for anybody that's listening to the show tonight to do. Again, it was county.
Oh,
Craig knew it.
Slowplanning.org.
Slowplanning.org,
yeah.
And I think it's pretty easy to find in there the Los Osos,
yeah.
Community survey. Pretty important for everybody to take a look at, and I hope that people don't send duplicates in. I had another question. As far as we lost $180,000 revenue stream from our trash company, our waste disposal company, I want to know, what are we going to be in charge of the community cleanups? Are they going to be canceled? Are they part of the contract? I've been asked by people when chipping days will be and when, chipping days is often done by the fire department, but those were benefits that this community had. We used to have a big, huge waste.
We all are looking at the same thing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Richard Margetson, you know, Craig, to try to turn the Finance Committee issue back on the public, and the reason is that it all of a sudden now is an emergency, and you don't think the public has a right to see the applications of the committee, that's disingenuous. You guys are the reason there hasn't been a Finance Committee. For what it's going on now, 5 months, and how many were even held last year in totality? That's on you guys. Don't put that on the community. I was here. It's on tape. Where's the administrative report? You're not going to hold this general manager accountable for anything. That's what it's come to? You directed her to have an administrative report. Verbal, written, whatever.
Nothing. You also, after my comments about the overbilling, directed staff to come back with something. And the answers you got tonight sufficed? Really? They made the mistake. And then, in investigating the mistake, I also found out that the other part of the district, part of those customers are being underbilled by $1.50 per billing cycle. So you have an underbilling with one half of the district that's collected. You have an overbilling issue in the other. And you're accepting the answer that staff is going to work with, that they'll contact the customers and it will be done. That they're going to come up with the right formula to calculate this and get these adjustments made. They made both mistakes, and you guys don't want to see it or have it come back before you or a committee? Really? That's how you're running a district. The revenue stream for that billing period where the overbilling happened, the last 3 years before this, was $127,000, $141,000, $142,000, and this year's billing cycle for that same number of the 80 days, $206,000. We're not talking a $5,000 mistake here, $500 mistake, a $1,500 mistake. We're talking substantial dollars. And you're going to leave it up to general manager and staff to come up with this and correct it. Maybe it's time, because I've been asked repeatedly by people in this community the last 2 weeks, maybe it's time for a letter or a viewpoint to go in the paper about this overbilling. And then see how many people you get coming into the office and wondering why they got overbilled for that billing cycle. This is irresponsible direction from the board.
Thank you.
Lynette Tornatsky, Los Osos. Just maybe a point of clarification, certainly not for you, but for the public. Our district engineer, Rob Miller, is sitting right over there, and he is the expert on water for the basin. So I'd just like people to know that he is our district engineer, and he knows more about it than anybody.
Thank you. All right, seeing no other public comment, I'll close public comment. And bring it back to the board. And so with that, go ahead.
I'm ready to make a motion.
Are you ready to make a motion? I'm just going to make one comment because it keeps coming up and up and up again. Yes, the Finance Committee has not met. Okay, we are coming out of bankruptcy and getting everything straightened out to start anew takes a phenomenal amount of time. And thus, we need patience from our committees. July 1st, when we start a new year, is when we'll probably be back to what we are used to seeing. But right now, our staff and general manager are overworked trying to clean up what has been done before. And the bankruptcy being finished allows us to purge or to reorganize, however you'd like to call it. So with that, yes, the Finance Committee has not met. Yes, we are coming out of bankruptcy. Yes, we are getting our house in order. Yes, it takes time. Yes, we need patience on your part of the public and the committees. And so, yes, July 1st, new financial calendar. We will probably, hopefully, be bored to death with the routine. So with that, I keep on hearing the same comment over and over again. It's not going to change it. So if you'd like me to say this again, I will say this again. So with that, I entertain a motion for the general action item 12B, emergency water shortage contingency plan. You may have the report.
Yes. Mr. President, members of the board, Rob Miller, your district engineer, is here this evening, and he will be presenting this item.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board and the public. Also have Ron Munns here with me for any questions that may come up. Ron and I, he's standing in the back there, worked on a subcommittee of the Utilities Advisory Committee to put together some decision points for board input this evening. This is not an action item, and we did that intentionally, knowing that this is a complicated subject, and not only complicated, but there's a lot of discretionary decisions that need to be made to bring this to fruition. And I'm going to, we have a few slides up there to help inform our discussion. But first, just to note the two key elements of this discussion with respect to water shortage planning. Number one is to come up with some triggers that actually make physical sense for our groundwater basin. We do have language in the current ordinance. However, it speaks to a shortfall in water production. And that's something that's very hard to quantify in a seawater intruded basin because we can produce all that we want of increasingly lower quality water. So one of the ideas was to bring more meaningful triggers, and the other was to look at if those triggers were hit, what responses would be put into effect. Just wanted to note that my other subcommittee member, Ron Munns, does serve at the City of San Luis Obispo's water conservation expert and had significant input and authorship into the numerical reduction goals based on his experience. So a brief discussion without reading from the staff note as to the triggers. We attempted to do two things with these. Number one is to look at climate-based triggers, and number two is to look at physical elements in our groundwater basin that could be measured that could be triggers. With respect to climate, we looked at some of the other plans that are rapidly being developed around the state. I'm sure you see them in the press. And we basically looked at a cumulative rainfall total in a drought situation and looked at triggers based on those rainfall totals as we looked at a multi-year drought triggering increasingly severe stages. We do have unique conditions within the district's water system where we have several wells that have no evidence of seawater intrusion, either now or historically. And we looked at water quality triggers associated with those wells. These are either or triggers, meaning if either the 8th or 10th Street wells exhibit these adverse water quality characteristics, we would release these triggers. The committee had some specific input into these items. Originally, it was just a chloride trigger, but we also added a measure of the total amount of salt, which we called TDS, or total dissolved solids. And those triggers were based on our historical review of the data. And we'll go ahead and click forward to another slide there. You can see that at the 8th and 10th Street well sites, the historical levels of chloride and TDS, or total dissolved solids, have been quite low. This has been very high-quality water. And if those chlorides begin to come up, it should be readily apparent that that trend is occurring. We also have shown up there for reference our Palisades well, which in the deeper zone, Zone E, did have evidence of seawater intrusion. And you can see some of the very high chlorides that we experienced before doing a rehabilitation on that well where we abandoned Zone E at that location. And so those are some of the historical facts over the last 8 or so years, and you can see how those triggers would come into play if we had degrading groundwater quality. Next slide, please. The other element is if those triggers did come into effect, what would we do about it? And we looked at a number of different ways to examine water reduction goals, and the staff report goes into some detail in the memoranda that are there, but just for the community's sake, we looked at, under the most severe water shortage, what would the amount of water be that would be available to our residential customers, and we settled on a minimum sanitary goal of 42 gallons per person per day, which has been achieved in a number of local communities in water shortage conditions, and that would be our floor, and that's no outdoor watering, no car washing, just minimum sanitary use inside the house. And we took that as the floor and then backed off from that with various percent reduction goals. So you may have seen in the current plan that, hey, we're going to hit a 50% reduction goal. But given that our water use is significantly lower than it was even 5 years ago in the community, simply sales, and that financial impact can be combined with the need to give people an incentive to save in these conditions, and we have some suggestions for how to do that. But either way, there needs to be further analysis of the actual dollar amounts that can be expected based on reduced water sales. And then compliance with legal requirements to actually incorporate these changes. We want to make sure we get good counsel as to what steps under Prop 218 need to be taken. And fortunately, we're not the only district who's doing this. There's a good webinar that was just presented by DWR. We have other local districts who are putting similar plans in place, so we'll have a lot of good peer information to draw upon. And so this is essentially a time to get board and public input to help to inform the committee's efforts and to fine-tune it, and then we'll be coming back to you at a future date. Be happy to answer any questions, and I know Ron is also available to answer questions if necessary.
Yes, Director Wright.
What are the in here you have the reports regarding the TDSs and such for us. Any input on Golden State? Are they in a similar intrusion scenario? Or
their situation is somewhat different in that they do have some very westerly wells, the Rosina well in particular, where they're constantly flirting with chloride levels going over the recommended drinking water levels. Their main production well is so far to the east with the South Bay, their own South Bay well that you see across South Bay Boulevard, maybe obviously too far in order to have it be a meaningful trigger for them. I would rather them look at our 8th and 10th Street wells as being those next westerly wells as being perhaps a combined trigger that since they share in the impact to those wells from their pumping, that perhaps that'd be a good trigger for them to look at as well.
In our consultation with Golden State Water and our attempt to provide continuity, I'm trying to get a good feel for what measures, when will we know we've achieved that? I mean, what are we asking of them? Are we asking them to cooperate? What are the things, I'm asking a lot of questions here, what are the things our board needs to do to move that forward, put pressure on, whatever, however I want to state it, but, you know, what can we do? Where do we have to go, I guess is what I'm asking.
Those are very good questions. I think the first thing to note would be we have a plan that we put together, put on the table. It's got definitive triggers and actions, and we'd like to see some feedback on that plan. If there are elements where we've missed the boat or been too conservative, we'd hope to receive their concrete feedback since they've dealt with this in other service areas in the state. And then they have a different process through the PUC. I know Ron and I have both done some review of their Rule 14.1 under the Public Utilities Commission. And so we would ask for their concrete feedback as to what their process would look like. Number one, are they willing to bring forward, if they agree with our triggers and approach, bring forward to the PUC a proposal to implement some of these ideas? And then number two, what's the process and timing of them doing that? So that can inform our process, and we'd know if we're going to be way out in front or in lockstep. So those are some of the next steps. And we'd simply be encouraging feedback, short-term feedback mm-hmm. on those issues.
And what's the vehicle for the communication? Is this ISJ we're talking about? Are the same players? Are we talking direct contact with Golden State management here locally?
We've done that, providing this plan both to local management and to legal counsel. Because we do have the ISJ framework, we'll certainly use that to the extent that we can. But there's no reason why we shouldn't be reaching out engineer to engineer, manager to manager, legal counsel to legal counsel to try to get response in whatever level is helpful. So I think all levels.
Do you anticipate any need for a community forum where we have a joint meeting or anything like that we can try to put together? Would that help in any way?
My opinion is that a drought plan like this will have a significant impact, particularly given the climate triggers. and as much community input as we can get would be very good, since when people realize that they can't water their lawns and they have to restrict water use severely, I think that that's very important to get the word out.
Do you
yet been impacted? Those wells are at risk. I mean, those are, I think, very important messages. However we can get that message out, I think, is beneficial.
Mm-hmm. Any other?
Dr. Ohuski?
Again, I agree with Director Muthaer. It's a very, very comprehensive and valuable report. And I think the consultation with Golden State is a critical issue here. I think we want to have them, you know, on board and understanding where we're going with this, because it's an equity issue, quite frankly. You know, we hear many times about how their ratepayers pay so much more than our ratepayers. We just want to make sure we're not carrying the burden of this. It needs to be spread community-wide. So I think getting Golden State involved is critical. My question, though, has to do with the third one, because that's a major concern, I think, from the district's perspective, the financial implications on the district, and how do we address those. And this isn't a comment. I'll do my comments after public testimony or public comment, but just a question of when you guys did the last rate study, how does that jive with this number 3 point bullet point here? And are we looking at an additional rate study, or what do we have to do? Because it says, you know, completion of a financial analysis, and if we're looking at, you know, 6 months to do a financial analysis, then that's problematic in my mind. So how do we expedite that, and how do we move that along is my question.
Sounds like a discussion. So
okay.
we'll first go to public comment and then come back.
I mean, because
remind
our revenues have
question.
Dropped from the conservation, as Rob mentioned. You know, so I just, that's just something that I think we need to throw out there. And it was meant as a question, not discussion, but I'll save it till later.
Okay, thank you. Director Wright.
I think, you know, to bring it home for people too, and again, I agree with the rest of the board, excellent report, but when you talk about the stage one alert, as of March 31st, less than 17 inches of rain. Okay, we are now at what, 5.5 at the most? So, I mean, we are bordering on the theoretical stage one right now. So I think this, again, it's a good report. I love it. And I think that we need to really push this forward. And I agree with Director Ohuski. We got to pull Golden State into this as much as possible.
Another question?
Yes.
As far as the triggers, and I know we talked about this a long time ago, but I wasn't involved with the UAC in the last year. Are there any downsides to these two triggers? I mean, what are some of the things that we see as maybe? I mean, nothing's perfect, right? There was a lot of different aspects on the table. Is there things here that the board that we can't really think about, maybe you guys have talked about?
Sure. I think on the climate trigger, the downside is people may perceive that you are being too aggressive. You know, hey, your wells are fine. Why are you assessing these penalties when we're not seeing a physical impact in the groundwater basin? We're predicting one because of drought, but maybe folks would view that as jumping the gun. Yeah.
And a comment to that: we don't know what it takes to recharge, right? I mean, do we?
Our model does not calculate those very short-term impacts.
Yeah.
And we could see fluctuations in seawater intrusion that could really damage some wells. Our thought was to be more proactive, but since you're actually impacting people's property and pocketbooks. That's could be a controversial discussion that may come up. With respect to the well triggers, the idea may be you're not being conservative enough. Are you really going to wait till our inland wells are being impacted by seawater intrusion? Or should we look farther to the west and look at our rehabilitated Palisades well as being the trigger, the canary on that? And so that's a difficult decision. The reason we came to not use the Palisades well is because it was only recently rehabilitated, and there's always the potential that the borehole that was originally done very deep may be slightly compromised. You might get some leakage between the zones. It may not be the best physical measurement. But that was a call that required some judgment, and we'd like some feedback into that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a comment, but okay. I'd better hold it.
Any more questions? All right. Thank you very much. So at this time, I'd like to open it up to public comment. And again, just to say what Mr. Miller said, is that the drought or the
just to give you an example, under your base allocations on page 2, you talk about if you were in a stage 2 situation, a single person could use 234 gallons per day. A two-person household, so that's 234 gallons per person. A two-person household, that'd be 117 gallons per person. And a three-person household, it's about 78 gallons per person. And you may find yourself in a fairness argument there. I would suggest that you go to a per-person allocation and then determine how many people are in the household. In Cambria, what we went to was a two-unit per person per month allocation. Now, we do bill on a two-month basis, so that's basically four people, or four units per billing period. Now, and then we use a form, and I'll leave a copy of it, where people can indicate how many permanent residents are in that house. So if there's five or six or seven or three, it's still a two units per permanent resident in the house. And so it makes it fair across the board, and you get away from some of the arguments. We do have some exceptions for medical emergencies. Obviously, some people need a lot of extra things. And we also count caregivers as a permanent resident of the household. The other thing that it does, an unintended consequence, was that it caught a lot of illegal or unlicensed vacation rentals, because all of a sudden they had to deal with just two units because it was not a permanent resident in the household. It was classed as somebody out of the area. So it does pick up some other things there. But just to keep you out of the argument of fairness, I would suggest you might look at that, and I'll leave a copy of this for you.
Very good. Thank you.
My name is Bill Moylan. I live in Los Osos. And I wanted to bring up the fact that Julie mentioned earlier. I talked about this a little bit earlier. 150 million gallons of water has been wasted by this dewatering. Some of the water that has been thrown into the bay had chlorides higher than acceptable, but not a lot. A lot of it had nitrates that were acceptable. Regardless, that comes out to 30,000 gallons per household if you consider 5,000 houses in Los Osos. 30,000 gallons of water is a lot of water. If the average home used 300 gallons a day, it would still take 3 years to use up 30,000 gallons of water. I think that's correct. Anyway, once again, I would like to request that the board speak to the BOS and the Water Board.
Okay, excuse me.
Yes.
Okay, for other public comments, we're talking about this water conservation plan and how we can better this. That's a different
subject. You're interrupting
me,
Mr. Baltimore. Let me finish my 3 minutes.
The 3 minutes are supposed to address the agenda item, okay? For issues not on the agenda, that was earlier.
Conservation.
Your time is finished.
Talking about conservation.
Your time has finished. Thank you. Your time has finished. Thank you.
You did interrupt me.
Your time is finished. Thank you. Please keep to the item on the agenda. It's the plan. It's the plan. Okay?
My name is Keith Weimer, Los Osos Sustainability Group. Thank you, Bev, for that recognition. I have spent a lot of time on this, and thank you, Rob, for all the information you've helped me with over the years. I appreciate that, too. I'm confused, like other people are. I thought we were in an emergency. I thought seawater intrusion had accelerated, and we haven't been able to slow it in 30 years. I thought that we were in a severe drought, and that requires emergency measures. What am I missing? By the time we see seawater triggers, it may be too late to reverse the seawater intrusion. What if several wells show this at the same time? Won't it be too late to respond? I don't notice the Third Street well on there as an indicator either. That's the one that's closest to the bay. Experts have told us, and we've asked quite a few experts, that you have to prevent seawater intrusion. You don't want to respond to it. It's too hard to reverse. Conservation, including outdoor conservation, should be mandatory and required right now. What are we waiting for? Use recycled water when it's available, and that should be mandatory too for properties, large properties, commercial properties, and anyone with heavy outdoor use. NAPOMO is not allowing new water hookups. Paso Robles is prohibiting new wells. The state is not allowing suppliers to set individual water budgets for properties and then to charge the full price of avoided water for anybody that goes over their budget. That way you don't have to worry about paying for aggressive programs. You just have to worry about standing up to people who want to use a lot of water. So take this back to the drawing board. Begin by insisting on aggressive programs in the basin plan and enact a strong budget-based program and enforce it with an ordinance. By the way, level 3 is doable without completely stopping outdoor water use, so your calculations are different than the ones that I've provided.
Yeah. Thank you.
Lindy Owen again. This thing is really annoying. If you could turn the volume down a little bit. This is a community conversation sometimes, and to listen to somebody trying to finish a sentence over this is annoying. Again, I want to go back to, I think this information is really good. I think it is going to be difficult for the community to understand. And I think along with a rate increase, which is, as far as I recall, we didn't get there yet. We started working on it, and it kind of fell to the wayside. With that rate increase, you need to educate that it's infrastructure increase costs that are making the rates go up. Then people get it. And then
Please. Right.
And then I think secondly, again, advertising, a thermometer showing, you know, where we're supposed to be and where we are today. Put 3 of them around town. I mean, if other people can put up Celebrate Los Osos signs and, you know, garage sale signs, et cetera, I think we can find a way to put some signage up that really pulls our community in. We have new lawns being installed still. It doesn't jive with the fact that we're talking about an emergency ordinance now. That's an obvious one. It's statewide. It's real obvious to us, and it should have been in place years ago, but now that we have the weather-related conditions, it's very clear for people to begin to understand, but they do need to understand that our well levels are dropping, and you can see it in the charts back there. So if you can't figure out a way to show people visually, then I would say that, you know, we need to go hire a PR firm or something, because those are the simplest ways to do it. I also liked Mr. Cliff's suggestion that it be per person, because I think those are goals that people will try to meet, the 50 gallon a day, and then say during an emergency it could go down to 40 gallons a day might be a way for people to understand and relate differently. And lists of ways to, you know, save on water. It's becoming a discussion in California, so that's great. And we don't have to be the bad guys, but we have to do it correctly. And I hope that, you know, this gets a little bit more work and we get some advertising to support conservation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker, and I first want to thank Rob and Ron. I think that's something the board needs to really appreciate, is the hard work from the committees.
and get your committees up and running and back to work for you. And thanks again, guys, because it's not an easy thing. This has been on our plate for a long, long time, and so it's nice to see something that we can work from. Sadly, it's too little too late. Our basin's in peril. And while the dewatering is going on, it's a slap in the face to this community to waste that water. We're putting $500,000 into a deionization station, and that's all this water from dewatering needed. It was clean up but for nitrates, and now it's just dumped in the bay. A third of it got put back in the ground, and it's not over yet, and Broderson hasn't been exercised. You got jerked around by the county. You did.
Doctor, what does this have to do with the conservation plan? I really, truly...
Are you interrupting me? Can my time be stopped?
No.
If you're going to speak,
no,
it's
you
your
are
turn.
Not speaking to the item on the agenda.
Yes, actually I am. And I look forward to its implementation when it's well-oiled and ready to go. So, I'll finish by saying I'm happy to see when you have these triggers met that we are asking the restaurants to serve water only on request. But the best thing I've seen happen lately is that the Van Buren fountain got turned off. It's not running water anymore.
Trying to figure out what they can use. Please put some type of footnote or something to that, if I'm correct. Next comment, dealing with the attachment one, the summary of climate and water quality triggers. This needs to be, talk about your emergency and rushes. You need to get this thing finalized, adopted, and determine what stage you're in. Because as I read this, I think there's easy justification for stage three, which is stage one rainfall total as of March 31st, less than 29 inches for over the two previous years. We had 5 inches last year. We're not even close to five this year. And the year before, we were less than 13. We're at three now, gentlemen. I don't know when you're going to come forward with some recommendation on, I mean, even if you go to two, we're there. I personally think you can make a justification for four if we look back in the rainfall records. But and then, because this is coming back to the committee, I'll make my other comments there. The financial analysis, I don't think it's 6 months, Marshall. I think you got the ability in this community to get that analysis done maximum 2 months. We have a lot of the groundwork already in place from the last rate study. Please don't waste money and send this out to a consultant. The last three rate studies have been done by this community and probably saved this district $60,000.
Thank you. Seeing no more public comment, I'll close public comment and come to the board. Any... Director Mura?
I just see that Mr. Miller has some comments.
I was
going to
ask the same thing. Mr. Miller has some.
Oh, okay.
So address some of the comments.
Go for it. Address any questions you might have.
Well, I think the public comment was actually very helpful in what I had expected. I think a good action step from Mr. Cliff's comments would be we've been talking, Ron and I, on the committee about balancing the administrative burdens of tracking each individual home with the equity issues, and perhaps the staff at Cambria can inform us as to the amount of person hours they've been spending to try to track thousands of household allocations, as opposed to our plan, which was if you're over three people, then you are eligible to ask. But I do see the equity issue there. If you're a house of one person, use all the water that you want. So there's definitely an equity issue there, but we'll try to balance that and reach out to Cambria to see what that took. There was a comment about the Third Street well and why wasn't that well used as a trigger. Certainly that well, because it's in a different aquifer zone, Zone C or the upper aquifer, was left off the table because we haven't seen seawater intrusion in that zone. Certainly if we did begin to see it, we would bring that immediately to the board and suggest that amendment. But at this point, that well's holding strong. We've never seen an impact in that well, to my knowledge, maybe back in the old days. Recycled water use, I think, is something that is a worthwhile topic as a drought mitigation, that if you were in one of the stages and you had recycled water available, you could continue to use it. Maybe that would be an incentive for, as opposed to people allowing their landscaping to die, particularly with larger landscapes. Difficulty for the community to understand, I think that's probably one of our biggest challenges, is it's such an impact to people finding creative ways to explain why we're doing this and what we're doing, I think, would be very important. I like the thermometer idea. And then clarifying 2-month versus 1-month billing. It's easy for us who are immersed in this to go back and forth, but we need to be more clear on that. And I concur that a financial analysis, we're probably looking at 2 months plus or minus, and we've been able the last few rate adjustments to do a lot of that in-house. Those were all my responses.
Good. Thank you. There's a couple of my
could
questions.
I ask him could I ask, while Rob's still here,
yes,
a question on terms of the per person. Are we going to be inhibited in any way because we only represent half of the population, or roughly, having Golden State being part of the other half? Statistically, can we?
I think we can still do all the things contemplated in the program and even go to the Cambria model if we needed to. Okay. It's just you're facing the equity issue with the person across the way who doesn't.
Okay. Thank you.
I mean, and our goal is that we would get together with Golden State immediately as soon as we get done tonight, and what direction we're going to bring this forward to them. So, I mean, that's the goal.
Any other questions, Mr. Miller?
Yeah, I have questions, and I just throw it out to everybody, really. In terms of the financial analysis, the previous rate study that we did, that we knew that was going to take us up till pretty much now, right? I mean, we knew that we would have to come back in a year and continue that on. That is for normal. That's for normal operation. Now we're diverting to abnormal, where we're going to ask people to pay, because we're going to ask them to use way less water. We're going to have to ask them to pay way more for it. And that's another study. Those are two different things, and I think we need to have a conversation about what that means. I mean, can we do that? Is that, you know, is that something we're certainly comfortable doing normal?
That was my question.
But are we comfortable doing not normal? And there, because it just seems like there's so many other factors involved. I heard many brought up at the UAC meeting, so I don't know who that is directed
Rob,
to.
Rob, before you answer that, and this was what the question I wanted to ask before was, I know we're going to have the normal rate study process going on, and I think that I heard, you know, we're talking about a 2-month, but I was seeing that as the rate studies that would be implemented if and when we adopted an emergency ordinance. Could you maybe talk to that? Because I know you're... I'm not trying to step on
you.
No,
I was going to ask him.
I mean, the question is, can we come up with what I would consider as an interim rate study that would allow us, you know, if and when we implemented these measures in a couple months, can we come up with a rate study that allows us to do it financially? Well, that was my question.
What I think we could come up with is a projection, an estimation. Because, you know, what we'll be doing is estimating how the community is going to react. You know, what we saw in San Luis Obispo, if you're asking for 5 or 10, you got 15 or 20 sometimes. And, you know, it depends how this community reacts. What I think we'll have to look at is what we have in reserves, because I think those have been funded to, you know, kind of soften the rate impact. But we definitely have to look at the realization. What do we need to bring in to keep the operations going? So it's definitely going to be a balance, and I don't have a good feel right now on how that would come out, but I think we could crunch the numbers.
Well, it's a two-month time frame realistic for that?
I think so.
Okay.
I mean, to get a...
Rob didn't want to commit for you, so now you committed for yourself. So.
Well, if we get the right people, we can do it.
Okay. I think that's the answer to most of our questions on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Okay. If I could talk to the equity
Please.
Question.
Yeah.
It's a very good question. When we talked about it in committee, we said, well, you know, you could make that a two-person household. You can make it a four. You know, we looked mm-hmm. at census data. We saw that 80% of the community was at three people or below. The other experience we have is typically a one- and two-person household uses very little water anyway, just the nature of those types of households. Nothing's perfect. You could go to a kind of a census methodology, but then you're needing more resources to verify and collect that data.
Can I follow up on that question? Because mm-hmm. one of the things that struck me is, I mean, and I guess you guys can check with Merle and the Cambria Community Service District, but it seems like it takes a lot of staff time to verify that. But another thing that just struck my mind was, you're also looking at people that are illegally, for lack of a better term, occupying RVs, trailers, because we have a significant number of those people. And, I mean, are you getting into enforcement more than, just this? Are you getting into policing rather than just enforcing water conservation measure?
In that sense, you know, that's more of an art than a science. It's really pick a methodology and all of them had, you know, pros and cons. So it's what you think will work for our community, plus be able to fit into what we have resource-wise, staffing.
Thank you.
I might be able to offer a little bit in regards to another community that has to deal with a water system like ours dealing with Golden State. In that community, we tried to go through the idea of using similar measures for our residents, and found that we could never get to that point. Instead, we picked targets for water reduction that they agreed to, so pumping restrictions. So basically a 30% reduction in pumping, they get to do it any way that they want to, and the district gets to do it any way that they want to.
Yep. Now I'll just get into my general comments now. So are we done with the questioning? I just had a couple of ideas. I mean, I really like the site.
Actually, I did have... I think I have another question. So, because, yeah,
I exercise.
I want to read this. I'm going to read it out loud since I'm thinking about it. So, compliance with legal requirements to incorporate the edits within the district code, including ordinance processing and Proposition 218 proceedings for the implementation of penalties and other financial incentives. That sounds like a timely process as well. And because it's last on the list, I don't want it to go anywhere. Do we need a 218? Do we need to do that? Or is that something that, is that an aspect of the plan that we can implement later or what? I'm not.
We did want to bring back certainty on that. And a good webinar that we need to see. We've got other communities who are doing it, maybe just a little bit in front of us, Nipomo being one. So I think we'll have some good information to bring back certainty. I believe we'll probably have to go through a 218 process to implement any rate adjustments, whether those are penalties or otherwise. But one of the steps we could take in these next 60 days as we look at rates is to look at process and bring back some certainty there as well.
Thank you.
Very good. Any other discussion?
Not hanging with my comments.
Go for it.
Okay. I wanted to thank Rob and Ron, especially for the hard work they did on this and everybody that was involved. I think that this is a very, very impressive document. So You know, I just had really three thoughts that I just wanted to lay out there. I think it's important. One of the most important things that we can do right now in the short term is community education, and I think we all agree with that. You know, we've had an item in our budget, and we've had that item in our budget, and we haven't spent it on community education. So I would really encourage us to go ahead and use that money. And, you know, whether it's thermometers on the corner, like Lindy threw out, or whatever it is, but so we can get some visuals out there in people's faces. And I'm not saying that negatively, but I think that communication and education is the key here, because everybody knows that there's a water shortage. They read it in the paper, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, it, you know, we got to make sure that it hits home that that's a local situation. So I think that, you know, maybe looking at using some of that money that's set aside in our budget for this education on water conservation is something we should consider and start spending now in the short term rather than the long term. So that's the first thing I wanted to lay out there. Secondly, you know, and I don't know how you do this, but I think it's important not only to educate the community but to get the community involved in this. And I mean, I know the obvious way to do that is to have a community workshop or something like that. And I also know that that's very time-consuming and a difficult thing to do. But I'm not sure that having a community workshop is not the right thing to do at this point. I mean, if we're looking at coming back in 2 months, if we can have a community workshop in, you know, 4 or 5 weeks before that comeback, I think that may be something we should consider, given, you know, we can use part of our educational budget for that. But I think that that's something that I would lay out there as a possibility. And I think the third thing that is real issue is that equity issue. And I appreciate what Merle said. We struggled with this when we were on the task force for the wastewater project. How do you deal with that equity issue as far as laying out, you know, consumption figures for a household? So I'm really been, you know, I've been involved with that one for a long time. But I think the third item is the equity issue that I think needs to be addressed. And if you guys can work with Cambria and find out how they're doing that, I just don't want us to get into the policing business, but I want us to get into the equity business, for lack of a term, better term. So those are my three comments.
Thank you. Any other final comments by directors?
I've got lots of comments.
Dr. Moodhart.
Just to address some of Marshall's things. One of the problems we've had with education, we've had lots of good ideas, and we've talked about different venues in the utilities for a long time, was getting staff resources or other resources to actually do it. Somebody to paint a sign, we managed to get a few signs done, just, and that took a long time. So as a board, we need to put some resources into it. We need to do that now, sooner than later, so that that can be implemented. The community workshop, I suggest that point. Okay.
I'd like to add what you just said, though. I'd like to add to that first bullet point, not just consultation with them, but also a consultation on a community workshop or something like that. So I'd like to add that to that task.
Okay.
I mean, I know I'm the one working with Rob on that task.
Yeah, no, this is perfect. That's what we need to do.
But I think I'd like to make that crystal clear. It's not just on the emergency regulations or ordinances. We're also going to work with them on an education program and potentially a community workshop.
The second item was identification of similar water reduction criteria for commercial and multifamily customers. We didn't have a whole lot of discussion about
Excuse
that.
Excuse me. I understand the meeting's going longer, but if you're going to be opening up packages, can you just excuse yourself to the back room? it's making a quite a racket. Thank you.
Okay. Anyway. share with everyone. Identification of similar water reduction criteria for commercial and multifamily. I know we've addressed the multifamily. We're going to talk to consult with Cambria about that, right? About that's different, right? About we're talking about multifamily. We're talking about apartments and buildings and things like that. We didn't really address that. Is there something you want to...
Yeah, go ahead. Address it.
We just needed a little more time and data on that. We have some concepts in the first memo on both, but we need to flesh those out. So I think that can happen concurrently with the other activities.
Okay.
Bulk of our customers are residential.
Okay, thank you, Rob. The third item was completion of a financial analysis to define the likely loss of revenue, Water Enterprise Fund, along with the quantification of customer penalties for water use above the allocated volumes.
We got Ron to volunteer for that one, so we're good on that one.
Okay, Ron, we're clear on what our recommendations are?
Yes.
Okay.
Board Member Motar, yes. On that one, I would like you to add to take into account that we do not penalize people who have already conserved. So they need to make sure that that area is included in that particular analysis.
Yeah.
You can ask
the I know that it was brought up in the UAC about the concept of rewarding people who have conserved. I don't know the specifics behind that, but it certainly seems like a well worth thing if we can pull something like that off. That's very equitable. Then compliance with the legal requirements to incorporate and edit the district code, including ordinance. I've already read that one. I think we're good on the last one. As far as the 218, and you addressed that, right? You know, I just want to reiterate the urgency. I just, you know, I think a lot of people have stated very well that, yeah, we are in stage 1 to 3, somewhere in there, and could very well be in 3. So, and that's defined in how we're defining our stage 3s here. So, whatever we can do as a board, I just want to be clear so that in a month we're... I don't want to avoid any situations, you know, where we're, oh, shoot, we should have.
I mean, I think our goal would be to bring this whole package back to us in 2 months, but I don't think that precludes us from doing the workshop and the outreach in the interim, though.
Not at all.
I mean, I think that that's a very workable time frame. So.
Okay.
All right. Are we finished with discussion?
Is there any board comments about staff resources in terms of expending resources?
I don't understand that
question. I think it's what Marshall was talking about, too, as far as we do have that money.
We have,
I think we need to direct staff to get that rolling.
Leonard said we've had, from the Utility Advisory Committee and the Financial Advisory Committee, we've had a lot of thoughts and ideas about how to spend it. We just never carried them through. So,
right.
I mean, if that's something that, I would say if it's something that the Water or the Utility Advisory Committee recommends, I would be fine with that, you know, up to, you know, say $10,000 or whatever, but just to get this thing rolling rather than just having the money sit there.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, if somebody wanted to volunteer to build a thermometer, would we put it someplace? And what would we put on? What would it?
Of a different rate structure. I can see, you know, rewarding, not changing the rate structure for people who meet the water usage, but then being a, I don't want to say draconian, but almost draconian rate structure for people who go over. But that needs public education. You just don't pop that on them. So I believe that a workshop sooner than later, because we're there and we're just taking the steps in the process that need to be taken to implement is what it amounts to. And again, we just don't want to drop it on the public. So I believe that maybe the UAC with the outdoor water conservation, that fund, also think about how to create a workshop from that, or to communicate to the people that we are in a some sort of severity rating, and that you know, something's going to happen. So I think those are good comments, and that's the direction I'd like to give staff and the UAC on that. And so the community education, the advertising, the fact that we are going to need to educate the public to be more proactive than reactive, because once seawater's here, it's tough to reverse. And then you also have the commercial and the multifamily, which are coming along. It's just a matter of timing for where this got completed. So with that, is there any... I want to direct staff the
Could I just add to that?
Sure.
I think that if Rob and I are... I assume you're willing to work with me on putting together this workshop or whatever, so I don't want that... And I'm nothing against the utility advisory, but that allows us to move it forward a lot quicker if Rob and I can get it
together. Yeah, you had already mentioned that, so I was going to bring that
Rob
up.
And I will handle working on a workshop, so that will get it done quicker, and then we'll take it off the utility advisory committee's plate, if that's okay with you.
Okay, and then are we going to give the UAC a rate study homework assignment? Okay. Well, he's our ad hoc committee on the UAC. he's the ad hoc committee of one. So that's a how it will go, okay. That he's through the UAC.
I'll go ahead and just talk to Rob or Ron about that, and we will present something at the UAC.
All right. So can I entertain a motion to direct staff to start communicating with Golden State and other entities such as Cambria to start moving this forward?
I don't know that you need a motion. I think you giving a direction and everybody's giving.
All right,
direction.
Staff, do it. So I just want to make sure, so staff start communicating with Golden State, Cambria, and we got UAC through subcommittee of one on the rate structure. We have a workshop with committee of two. Okay.
Yeah. Why don't you just go ahead and appoint an ad hoc committee of myself and Mr. Munns. Can we do that?
Can we do that on this?
An ad hoc committee, I think. Let me take a quick look here.
Yeah. Because the ad hoc committee has that one, I mean, it has that
the board
one.
Board
no,
member?
No, it's just that one item. Once that one item's done,
one
then
item,
the committee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it could be one board member. It only had to be one board member.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's one board member.
It's under your bylaws, an ad hoc committee is two or less board members.
Okay. Yeah.
So
we'll just leave it through the UAC
just
ad hoc.
Just make it a one board member ad hoc committee, and I'll beg Ron.
Okay.
I think we have Ron on tape right now, or on video, so I don't think he can.
Yeah, I just want to make it
so that
official.
That, I guess, ends the discussion and the agenda item. With that, it says it's very close to 10 o'clock. So does the board think there's enough time to get through the next agenda item? And if not...
I'd like to make a motion. We extend the meeting past the 10 o'clock hour.
Until when?
We'll go to
10:45. That would need a majority. Any discussion on that?
There's not been a second.
No, that's right. I need a second first. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, any discussion on that? I know that staff has been working early this morning to this point, and they're probably running on fumes. If not, they're past that point. All right, thank you. We're ready to reconvene. I want to investigate just a little bit. Do we have confidence that this item can be wrapped up in 45 minutes? General Manager?
No, this item cannot be wrapped up in 45 minutes. By the time you have public comment and you also have board comments, and by the time you provide whatever direction you would like to provide to me.
So, but we're going to have a presentation from the General Manager, and are there any other presentations we're going to have?
No, we are only going to have the presentation from the General Manager. Your interim district accountant, Dale Flynn, is here to provide me with assistance should there be some questions that come up from you as a board that I can't, that I don't have the information on, and she may have it.
So we're going to be very close to that 45-minute time is what it sounds like.
And well, so yeah. I think that, I mean, I would like to, I'm going to propose that we extend this out to the next meeting. It would give some time for a little bit more review, a little bit more preparation. I think staff was under the gun to get this done. From my conversations, so that would be my proposal, is for us to bring this back next month for a full evaluation.
Mr. Seitz, can we at least give the presentations and then move it, or is it once you start it, you got to end it?
Once you start it, you do have to continue on. You've extended the meeting to 10:45. If you wish to continue it, you still have to allow public comment on the item.
I would have no problem with that.
So I'm not quite.
You don't. The staff report's not given,
right?
And so the public would be commenting on what they've either read or on the actual motion to continue either of those items.
But I'm just trying. So what you're saying is we have to go to 10:45 and continue it as far as it will go, or is just
after
public comment?
No. If you decide that you wish to continue the matter,
correct.
And there is a motion and a second.
Right.
Before you vote on that motion, you have to allow for public comment on the item.
Okay. So as I understand that, so we're going to start with public comment, right?
If the motion is made. Otherwise we start with the staff report.
Mm-hmm. Right. All right. So is that clear to the directors?
I'll make the motion to continue it to the next meeting.
I'll second that.
Okay. Public comment.
Mm-hmm. Now well, we have to we have public comment first,
yes.
And then we vote.
Yes.
All right. So there's been a motion and a second, and now open the floor to public comment. Agenda item 12C, mid-year budget.
Good evening again. I am Julie Tacker, and this will give you the opportunity to maybe refine the staff report to answer the questions that come from the public at this time. I look forward to that. On page 2 of the staff report, there's some discussion about the changes to the mid-year of the administrative department. I understand that there were increased expenses due to hiring. And I have to ask, who is Dale Flynn?
Nope.
And I don't see her as a contractor in your warrants, and I know the district is an equal opportunity employer, and I didn't see a notice go out for the job opening. And just how did we get Ms. Flynn, and you know, welcome aboard, but the process is the process, and how did this happen? Down in the changes to the water department, the mid-year for the capital expenditure of the desander, it was not expensed as of mid-year. Does that mean we will just on the Whitaker pipe, and that doesn't appear to have been sold? And
Moreover, why wasn't this pipe transferred as an asset of the project? And then when we ask about assets, what are we doing with the other assets that the CSD's sewer project purchased that didn't get transferred? And there are many. So I'd like to know about that. And then back to my questions on the warrants, those assessments that are being refunded via the bankruptcy, I'd like that question answered thoroughly.
Thank you.
This, the way this was handled tonight, typical. Leave it to the last agenda item. Can't believe you've taken any shots at the community about this, Craig, but 8 years ago, same thing. Community wasn't involved. I came to this microphone. Stan Gustafson was sure that night that he was going to catch me on something. 47 minutes later, the entire budget was sent back to committees and the general manager and staff to redo. 47-minute public comment. I'm going to give you one example tonight. You might want to turn to page 101 of the administrative budget. Now, you have computer programs that are supposed to have add addition tabs, subtotal column, capability. Under total communications, are we on that page, anyone? As of December 31st, 2,163. Approved budget, 4,300. Proposed mid-year budget, 4,300. Proposed budget revision, 2,163. Negative 2,163. Tell me now, gentlemen, how that affects every subtotal under that for the rest of the entire administrative budget. Your entire staff report as far as the administrative budget total with reference to administrative expense allocation. But see, if you'd had your committees up and running, I wouldn't have to do this here. And before Lynette comes up and says anything, I guarantee you, Lynette, I know more about the finances of the district than anybody sitting up there. You better go over this with a fine-tooth comb because these are throughout the document. Now, is that blamed on the bankruptcy? If these numbers were put in, the subtotal button should have come up and caught these errors. So is the same thing happening that happened with the accounting person that was under Bruce Buell, where she was inputting them manually and doing the subtotals manually and putting the numbers in, which led to the 47-minute comment where we corrected every account and every fund? I'm not even going to give you any more. You can find the rest.
Thank you. All right. Seeing no more public comment, I'm going to close public comment.
So now you take a vote on your motion.
So we discuss it. Do we want to discuss the motion?
I'm in favor of continuing. That's why I voted no on extending the meeting. So.
All right. Vote on continuing.
Director Storm.
Aye.
Director Meadhart.
Yes.
Director Ohilski.
Yes.
Vice President Wright.
No.
President Baltimore.
Yes. All right. With that. Oh, yeah. We have, yeah.
B.
This is now 12D, I guess, which was consent item B. Right. So, approval of the meeting minutes from February 6, 2014 to February 26, 2014. And so are we going to have a public comment, I guess, on the approval of minutes? Seeing no public comment, I'll close public comment. Any discussion from the board?
I'll move that we approve the minutes, formerly item 11B on the agenda.
I'll second.
If staff can do that, then staff can do that. If staff can't...
No, I'm not asking for a resolution by next month. I just want to have a definitive plan is all I'm asking for.
A definitive plan?
If it's not resolved, how and when will it be resolved?
It is resolved. It's part of the process. The process that they used to roll out the new billing software was not a unique process. This is just part of the process. I don't understand what you're asking staff. What are you asking staff?
Well, if
are you asking them what they're doing every hour, every half hour?
No. What I'm asking... okay. All I'm asking is that Margaret said in her... or it was said that they're addressing this thing. I just want to know when it's going to be resolved is what I'm trying to get at. Because there was a billing... problem with Brandon. Maybe Leonard, could you maybe speak?
Well, I agree. I think it's in the minutes. We wanted a report back on the status
right.
of this, and that's what we're asking for. Is the status is it? What are we doing about it? Where does it lie? What have we? You know, what steps have we taken to correct it? And I think it's a fairly reasonable request because it was reported that we had a problem. I think it's something that the board of directors should be updated on.
But you have to... okay. And so I contend we don't have a problem, okay? That when you roll out new software, right, you're going to have ups and downs, ins and outs, right?
You are.
Okay. And so with that, you're going to expect some of that, okay? And so you have to allow staff to go through the process. Now, if you're asking them, you know, where they are in the process?
Mm-hmm. Basically.
Okay.
Yeah, where are we? You know we have to rectify the problem. What are we doing about it? And if possible, when's it, you know, what's the resolution and the expected...
I'm not asking for it to be resolved by next meeting. I just want to, I'm asking for an update. And I think Leonard expressed it better than I did. So,
you know, if staff wants to come back and say they need resources for it, you know, be willing to help them in any way that we can. Support their solution.
Still a little ambiguous to me what you're asking for, but do you have an idea what to deliver? Okay, very good. So the future agenda item will be a report from staff on what they did that one.
Just an update. Update us on
a month in the life of staff.
Maybe it's an update on the implementation of the new billing program.
There you go. That makes sense.
Okay.
That makes a lot of sense. Okay.
Whatever.
Okay. So, update on implementation of the billing program. Very good. All right.
Yeah. About includes the situation we ran into. Where are we and what are we doing about it?
Yes. Any other items?
Well, I'd like to see update progress report of the water shortage contingency plan. Just keep us, you know, on task. I think
it's a report on
on that, and then also I'd like to see on the agenda so we can take action as to appoint the committee members to the FAC.
And along with that, the appointment of the reappointment or the adjustment of the
chairs and vice chairs. So Director Storm can get himself on a committee.
So he can get to work. All right. Very good. With that, closing comments from the directors.
we'll start.
I just want to express my appreciation again to Rob and Ron for all the work that they did on that analysis and report. I thought that was outstanding. I really did. I think they went way above and beyond the call of duty there. So I want to express that.
Oh, yeah. Great. Director Storm?
Yeah, I would echo Director Ohilski's comments, and I'd like to give this opportunity to thank the directors for placing their faith in me, and I look forward to working with you and for the community to keep us going forward. Thank you again.
Director Muthart.
Go ahead. I'm pondering.
Out.
Sorry. Yeah.
Okay, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind the community about the fundraiser for Anna Ford this Saturday here at the South Bay Community Center. The wife of